mystery, drama, and fiction.
From Now Until Eternity by Martin Foreman. Read by Andrew Fettis. The tables are stored, the seatbacks righted, belts buckled. Stewardesses glide by, nurses at night checking their patients' heartbeats, teachers in kindergarten encouraging children to put away their toys. My nighttime erection subsides as I stare out of the window at distant housing estates, railway lines slinking through toy suburbias, tiny cars skittering by. A London I know but do not recognise. An early Sunday morning in summer. Then the Thames sweeps into view, motionless, eternal. The crystal curve of Waterloo Station, Charing Cross, Legoland, the Houses of Parliament, and London Eye. Among a small crowd of chattering tourists, we rose slowly into the air. I stood behind you, entranced by the mystery of your thick, dark hair, by the delicate tones of your perfume. "The river looks tired," you said. I murmured a reply. By chance, my fingers brushed your hand, and by intention, as we stared into infinity, your fingers claimed mine. A touch so light and strong, my heart thudded, then disappeared. We were alone. I took you in my arms, and we fell into a waltz over clouds and sunshine. My arm around your slender waist, your gentle breasts nestling into me. Your hand, your beautiful, long, dark hand on my shoulder, all possessing me and yielding to me as we swirled over London in the shadow of my once shallow life. The plane hits the ground, shudders to a halt. New York, 7 hours and a lifetime behind. Friends in loud, gloom-lit bars salute and forget me as they drink through an endless night. On the other side of this slumbering city, you stretch out on a bed of subdued light and subtle scent, of promises granted and withheld. The curve of your cheek, brown as mahogany and soft as silk, the bouquet of scattered long black hair, your slender mouth half open like a child's, your arm embracing a pillow as it once embraced my unforgiving white body. Every Sunday, I tell myself, you sleep this way. Every Sunday for a year you have shifted in your sleep as images of wonder surrounded you, as your limbs traced the paths you ran, the treasures you held, the lovers who wooed you. Every Sunday, each slight unconscious gesture has echoed across the ocean to haunt me, wakening me from too short and too drunken a sleep. Whether alone or with a stranger, I pushed myself out of bed and watched you wake. Pulled on sweater and jeans and saw you sit up and reach for the robe that draped you like an evening dress. A year ago, you would prepare breakfast as I walked to the corner to buy the Observer and wondered what chocolate or magazine or trinket to surprise you with. 6 months later, with the Times delivered, I had nowhere to go but the kitchen. There your ghost lingered, laughing at the slovenly manner in which I alone slipped bacon and egg into pans, or, when I had company, smiled at the politeness with which I offered breakfast options. The long corridors are sluggish with bawling children and patient mothers, old couples in stubborn silence, first-time lovers and anxious students, arrogant businessmen and nervous mules returning home or drawn to London from the four corners of a shrunken world by restless avarice or ignorance. As I shuffle forward to show my passport to a middle-aged man stiff with boredom and disdain, from the corner of my eye, I see you shake your head. I turn nervous and relieved. But it is someone else. Another woman of the same height and complexion. As alluring as you, her presence is as unexpected as yours was that first night in Fulham, at a predictable party in a predictable terrace house, predictably saturated with music and chatter. As friends and strangers eddied like leaves in a swirling stream, you stood quietly in the kitchen, in impeccable dark dress, first among equals in a coven of beauty. I reached for wine, met a familiar face, and talked. When I turned back, you had gone. Only an hour or so later, when I had drifted upstairs and was discussing the minutiae of barcodes with a safely married man, did you pass me again and smile. I walked over. The music died, the people faded, and in that room overlooking the river with abandoned coats strewn across the bed, we tentatively pushed the door of each other's personalities and carefully walked in. The scuffed, dull snakes circle slowly, shrug off their burdens, shuffle out and return patiently grunting with more. My suitcases still lie in the hold, asleep or afraid of a land they have never seen. I'm tempted to leave them, but they bear gifts for you. Scarves and jewellery, perfumes and books, ornaments and CDs, sacrifices and peace offerings, a year's penance and a lifetime's plea. If nothing else, they will buy me time as you open each and laugh or scold, contemplate or thank. For if the door opens and you do not greet me with pleasure and relief, but stare in shock and embarrassment, if, as you invite me in, your eyes are cold and voice distant, if you do not move to embrace me but stand back as a stranger, my suit is already lost, and only these presents, these bribes, can win my appeal. That first night, as we exchanged names and friends in common, confessed to working in the law and design, shared plots of films and names of restaurants, swore cynicism with all media and politics, I fell into a maelstrom of fear. Fear that we would never be lovers, and fear that only making love with you could give my life meaning. Fear that it was not sex but an act of worship that I wanted, and fear that it was only sex that I was capable of. No matter that girlfriends reproached my good looks, that colleagues admired or resented the efficiency with which I created and managed, that my home was comfortable and my social life full. At 31, 15 years after losing my virginity, and with 2 long affairs under my well-worn belt, I stood before you as uncertain as a 10-year-old dazzled by the brilliance of an adult world about to reject him. That night, alone in bed and unable to sleep, I made love. Not to you. I did not dare. But to a surrogate, an actress in a forgotten movie whose breasts and thighs had haunted my teenage years. Spent, I allowed myself to kiss you, then drifted into sleep and woke to a different universe. I wandered, dazed, from the film set of my room to a stranger's bathroom, and a kitchen littered with the unwashed dishes of the person I had once been. I was alone in this new world. There was no friend I could call to tell what had happened, because I had friends only in my past, and because what had happened I did not know. I spent the day reading the newspaper, watching television, and desultorily cleaning. The next morning I went into work, greeted colleagues and made jokes, read emails, studied contracts and made phone calls, and no one knew. No one saw that I was not the man they had once known, whose life was suddenly both ineffably wondrous and petty and meaningless. It was a month before we first made love. I was 16 again, but a 16-year-old whose excitement and sense of wonder was deepened by a knowledge, not ignorance. I had kissed you and held you. Let my mouth graze your breasts, my hand mould your hips, my erection tap its insistent message of desire on your belly. But I had gone no further, held back by the fear that to have what I wanted would destroy it. But in your tall, warm house overlooking Victoria Park, on the bed in your darkened room, with your scent stronger than ever, a muskiness that I have no words for, with passing teenagers shouting in the street, with the deep bass of a distant party reverberating, with my breath held, my clothes too many, too clumsy, your eyes open and welcoming, with the warmth of your back as my hands slid under your dress, with the ache in my groin that almost brought me to tears, with the touch of your earlobe under my tongue and swelling of your nipple under my fingers, we made love. Briefly, I saw myself through your eyes, lips too thin and brow too broad, a body well cared for and too pale against your own. I wanted to hide it, but could not. Instead, I let you bathe it in your gaze, touch it, grasp it, and as you did so, I stared at yours, touched, stroked, kissed, grasped, licked, and held every part of you, until self-consciousness gave way to pleasure, pleasure to passion, and passion dissolved into oblivion. You sleep on, oblivious, another Sunday free before you. The Heathrow Express hums importantly past houses and shrubbery. In Manhattan, I clattered into work on an aging subway that had seen the Dodgers and the Son of Sam. I emerged into Grand Central each morning admiring its refurbished soul, walked to my office along canyons of concrete and steel. At lunch, I watched the pangs of rebirth in Times Square, listened to reggae in Bryant Park, or entertained clients in restaurants that maintained an elitism that London had long since lost. In the evenings, I explored and fell in love with New York, the all-night groceries and brownstones, the noise and silences, the communities of 100 nations straddling isolation and integration, the optimism of youth, the arrogance of success and the anger of failure. I contemplated marrying the city, devoting my life to her, putting up with her indiscretions and infidelities, her greed and egoism for the sake of her embrace, for the opportunity to spend that lifetime uncovering the secrets and promises that loitered on every block. But the longer I stayed, the more acquaintances I made, the more women I met who adored my accent or my body, and who begged me to take them to London or ecstasy. The better I performed my work and the more the words partnership and stock options were uttered, the more familiar I became with subway lines and cross streets, uptown apartments and downtown restaurants, Saturdays at the Met and Sundays in the park. The more I wanted you, and the stronger your memory, all the memories of you became. In Soho, one October evening, you laughed. Two men passing hand in hand heard you, saw me, and blessed us both. I smiled back, and all our souls became one. The street full of couples in love, the lights of shops, cafes, and bars exploding into quiet fireworks, the pavement tables, merry-go-rounds, swirling through the streets. Everyone joyous, as they rode wild horses that pranced eternally past the dark music of starlight. Tower Bridge that first day. Your blouse half open, my thoughts ubiquitous, on the hundreds of years of London echoing in battlements and ships, cyclists and red buses, dull water and reborn warehouses, on the blue sky and cool breeze, on the work you were telling me about, a complicated case of Pride and Prejudice, on the new contract I had negotiated, on the velvet lips that I had not yet kissed, shoulders that I had not yet held, patient breasts that I worshipped unknown and unseen, on the soft belly I longed to lick and nuzzle, on the dark scented secret below. Venice at Christmas. Dark, cold, tired and disdainful. Alleyways in which we slipped in time, brightly lit shops that were always closed, selling souvenirs and home furnishings to phantasms that we could almost see. You were quiet, pleased to be with me, but guilty to be away from mother and father, younger siblings and older cousins. I lay on the bed, reading the guidebook as you talked to each in turn, and the history of the city became the history of your family. Your father and brothers, doges, who conquered and pillaged Constantinople and sent fleets to destroy the Genoese fleet. Your mother, the woman who dispatched Tiepolo's army. Your sister and aunts, the manipulators of merchants and artists, diplomats and soldiers. At last, you put the phone down. And, as surprised as you by the eruption of anger and desire, I pulled you down beside me, carefully tore off your blouse, pulled up your skirt, pushed aside the red cotton, and rejoiced in my taking you as you stared up, first bewildered, then hostile, then accepting. I stabbed into you all my loneliness, my longing, my fear, hoping that the jerking of my hips and the spurt of my seed would bind you to me forever, that we would freeze in an eternal orgasm. The raped virgin, her white bra defending what was left of her womanhood, the conquering fallible god, his body stretched in Pyrrhic victory, became one, inseparable, immortal, triumphant being. Ealing, Acton, names that evoked laughter in my parents' day. Even in the sunshine, this London looks dreary. Queens without the glamour of the accent and energy. In the year that has passed, there have been 5 women. 2 sought to slip into your shoes. 1 might have been you, but her shell was empty. Your humour is slow and deep, but strong. Hers was light and weak. Your clients are people with problems. Hers were problems with people. You relax at night. She was rigid, a wasp in every sense of the word. We pretended our coupling was emotion, but it was less than the ritual of animals, for there would be no offspring, no reason for our sweat and groans. I served her, fell asleep, and woke in her apartment like a man abandoned on a planet where the landscape and inhabitants are not hostile but indifferent. She offered me breakfast as a scientist feeds animals on whom he no longer experiments, and I would leave, relieved and disappointed, to call her the next day, whatever lesson I had learnt obliterated by the memory of her perfect body, of her mouth torturing my erection, of her groans and shudders as I pumped my frustration and anger and lust and longing into her, seeking not union, but rejection and disapproval. The other was a waif from Idaho, who had drifted into Manhattan in search of certainties she could not find at home. By day she wrote fiction that she allowed no one to read, and at night she fluttered in theatres, dressing stars, repairing costumes, and dreaming of fame and reassurance. For a month we met. She, dazzled by my Englishness and wealth, and I, beguiled by her naivety. I saw the tired apartment she shared, her self-indulgent roommate, the self-development books that wove no magic, and the magnets of flowers and tired optimism on the fridge. I pitied the frightened longing in her eyes and told myself I could protect her. Banish her fear with children, a house in the Hamptons, retirement to Oregon or California. But my strength was not enough. It could not bear 2. There would be moments when I too would need embrace, reassurance, forgiveness, and at such times I knew she could only stand by, her incomprehension slowly dissolving into contempt as my love rotted into affairs with coy secretaries and ambitious young artists. Paddington is half empty. Elderly ladies stand protecting their cases, casting disapproving glances as all-night revellers, weakened by headache and fatigue, make their way home. I drag my past in one case and my future in the other towards the taxi rank. The row of cabs like stalking panthers. But at the last moment turn away, afraid to wake you from too deep a sleep. In the Ersatz Theme Café, I know I'm back in England, where the waitresses are surly and the coffee unpalatable. If it were not for you, I would go back to the airport, take the first plane to leave. I love you and fear you. I love your strength and intelligence and kindness to those who you eventually trust. I fear your unspoken demands. Expectations of a lover, of the father of your children, may be greater than I can ever offer. On a path that began in the suburbs of Kingston and led through boarding school, university and chambers, you are climbing relentlessly onwards to the bench or parliament. A child of the provincial middle class, I have wafted through life, propelled by a talent I never earned, seeking no more than the prestige to choose only the clients and projects that interest me. Your sex and your race make you struggle for success. Mine allow success to fall into my lap. You achieve. I take. and so you have become strong, while I have remained weak. Before we met, I felt no shame and faced the world with pride. The longer we were together, the more uncertain and unconfident I became. That is why I never admitted I loved you. Never went down on bended knee, never uttered the spell and opened the magic box to reveal the enchanted ring that would transform our lives forever. I was afraid of revealing the last part of myself, afraid of embarrassment rising in your eyes, afraid of rejection in your voice. I could not risk what might be the last words I would ever speak to you, the words that would raise me not to the heights of a lifetime with you, but that would cast me into the abyss of solitude. There were many times I wanted to say them, alone in a bar, surrounded by friends, meeting you, leaving you, speaking to your answer phone, going to sleep, waking up in the middle of the night, handing you a pan in the kitchen, taking a bag from you in the street, holding your hand, letting it go, kissing you, holding you, falling asleep at your side. Every moment I whispered the spell that I never dared to speak. But if I never said the words, I never forgot when they first echoed in my mind. There was no romantic sunset or summer afternoon, no winter by the fire and television, only a Saturday morning, when heavy with drink I woke at lunchtime to a tidied flat and waiting brunch. I sat at the table under the shadow of a headache. You sat opposite, unbelievably bright. "Where's the orange juice?" I asked. "There isn't bloody any," you said. And because your tone was affectionate, because a smile lingered on your lips and your eyes, because we had a day and eternity ahead of us, all I could do in that moment of joy, of light, was fall in love. The taxi pulls out into a strange and familiar scene, where figures and cars and buses pass as insubstantial as holograms. The streets are too narrow, the buildings too short, intersections too complicated, and traffic unregulated. The signs are in English but point to exotic locations, Maida Vale and Marble Arch, Edgware and Euston Roads. I'm in a film where Cockney lads buy milk and exchange gunfire, where urbane spies smile quizzically at ruthless villains, where naive Americans are bemused by impolite incompetence. This is no longer my home. I'm a fool to leave the security and promise of New York to return to a city and career I willingly abandoned. A fool to come unannounced to your door, to knock and find you not there, or not alone. In your infrequent emails there has been no mention of a lover, no more than I have mentioned the Manhattan lawyer, nor Idaho orphan. And like a fool, I took silence to mean absence. Pushed the idea to one side, convinced myself that no one could take my place, that you would rather face the world alone if you could not have me by your side. Only now, as the closed shops of Oxford Street slip by, as Centre Point casts its shadow, as we stop at traffic lights and I stare at men and women through car windows, wondering what strange accents they speak, what strange lives they lead, only now do I face the inevitable, that I will have been replaced. Another man, perhaps a year or two older, a year or two more mature, more self-confident and relaxed, must share your life. Each night he holds you in his slumber, and in each dream you turn to kiss him. He has already declared his love, already proposed. The ring sits on your finger. When alone you stare at it, turn it, perhaps you even hold it to your lips. Kiss it, eyes closed, making a wish that will inevitably come true. And so, a fool, a clown, I rush towards my doom like a lemming, a toy car on a dining room table, only now awakening to my fate. In a few minutes, I will ring your doorbell. When it opens, you will stand there, motionless in surprise, shadowed by a taller figure whose eyes and face I never want to see. All I can hope is that you will look at me. You will call my name and leap forward and throw your arms around me, the little girl I have never seen. Forgotten, the stranger will fade. I will apologize, quietly, simply, calmly swear my love and devotion. The last of your anger and disappointment will dissolve. The cases will be hauled into the hallway, the door closed behind me, and we will kiss like teenagers, like a couple, one of whom has been released from captivity, like the last man and woman to survive this blighted earth. Hackney Road passes. The odd shop and painted doorway a harbinger of gentrification to come. You are ever closer. I want to stop the taxi, to walk the last mile, to approach you at my own speed with my thoughts and breathing under control. But my suitcases leave me no choice. I can only rehearse what I have to say. I can only pray that you will be alone. Whatever I might wish, the apology will be neither simple nor calm. Mumbling, shy, angry with myself and afraid of you, I will stumble out words that express my confusion. You too will be uncertain, but after a moment's confused silence, you will take pity on me. In the days to come, there will be celebrations. At night, dinner for us, alone in one of the restaurants at the end of the street, where the waiters are either young and gauche or old and sternly maternal. Next week, a party for all the friends I once knew. There will be ceremonies, the bended knee at last, then the church in London or Kingston, our parents and family eyeing each other suspiciously as we make promises, not to God, but to each other. Your mother will fuss over us and my brother will embarrass me. Speeches will be made. There will be ungainly dancing. The bouquet will be thrown. The graffitied limousine will drive away. Then our life shall begin. There will be children. Two, perhaps three. A boy as careless as myself and a girl as thoughtful as you. Each good-looking, of course. Dark enough to be black, light enough to be white, their lives will be easier than yours has been, more difficult than mine. With luck, they will inherit your intelligence and my talent, your drive and my tolerance. For a time, they will despise us. Then I hope they will return to love us, to provide comfort and affection as we stiffen into age. And every night, from now until eternity, after we have made love and before I slip into endorphin-induced sleep, I will hold you, or look at you, or kiss you, or smell you, or touch you. I will whisper my love and gratitude to one who let me slip away and welcomed me back again. And the bedclothes will fall from us, and we will float through a universe where nothing exists except our love for each other. A nirvana that no mystic can imagine, a paradise that no believer can attain. The house stands motionless. I step out of the taxi, hear nothing but the growl of the engine, feel nothing but the beating of my heart, see nothing but the unfamiliar coins trembling in my hand, taste nothing but fear. The taxi pulls away. I stand at the curb, the suitcases at my side. Behind me in the park, a dog barks, children shout. I dare not move. Your bedroom curtains are closed. Through the living room window, I see the same beige sofa, books on the shelves, a plant which is new. With pounding heart, I force myself up the few steps. Stand where I have stood so often before. Stand at the threshold of my destiny. I have never been so afraid. That was From Now Until Eternity by Martin Foreman, read by Andrew Fettis.
Arbury, drama and fiction.
Hear more drama and fiction, old and new, on arburyproductions.co.uk.